Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:33. Let's make that 7:34 here at WCCO. All right, our first guest, I'm so excited to interview him. Michael C. Reichert is Dr. Reichert, and he's executive director for the Center for the Study of Boys and Girls' Lives at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, let me tell you a little bit about it. Every generation has its concerns when it comes to raising children. In an age that includes social media and discussion on the definition of masculinity, how easy is it to raise young boys? Well, after reading a New York Times opinion column, I wanted to dig into the challenges of raising young boys in the 2020s. Now, to prove some insight, we've invited Dr. Reichert on this program. And he is the author of How to Raise a Boy, The Power of Connection to Build Good Men. He's joining us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. How are you, sir?
Hi, good evening. Nice to be with you.
I tell you, this is what we need to be talking about right now, because our children are really not doing well during this pandemic. And when you say, oh my goodness, we need to really pay attention on how we are raising our boys and our girls, it's the boys that stand out the most to me. I don't know why it's so devastating for the children nowadays. Of course, we know that many of the children are not seeing their parents as often, or maybe they're having problems at home. And this pandemic has snatched away so much joy from all of us that when it comes to building those boys and building those girls, not always is it actually happening. Tell us how you began really paying attention on raising a boy.
Well, you know, I think I came by it naturally. I had two sons, and happened at the time I had my second son to be working at an all boys school outside of Philadelphia. So I was getting a double dose of, being called, I guess, to think rigorously about boys' development and what they needed from their parents and their teachers. I was fortunate. The school asked me to create a research center, and we gathered together some of the top scholars in boyhood studies from around the country and began really digging into what did we know about boys? What did they need? What I first discovered, this was back in 1992, what I discovered was the answer was not much. We had lots and lots of folks that felt that they knew what boys needed, but for generations, the outcomes of boys' development have not been encouraging, have not validated the theory. So, I kind of went back to the drawing boards and decided to apply a more rigorous scientific lens to, in particular, to education, and ask the question, what's working in boys' education? And we gathered 18 schools in 6 different countries, 1,500 boys age 12 to 18, and 1,000 of their teachers. And we asked one simple question: what's working, in an online survey? And what we discovered was that all the theories of boys' education out there didn't do justice to how clear boys describe themselves as relational learners, needing a sense of being known and cared for by their teachers or coaches before they would be willing to engage, before they would be willing to be vulnerable and go to that outer edge of what they know how to do and ask someone to help them. That was back maybe a couple of decades ago now. But that work proceeded. Once we identified boys as relational learners, I began to extrapolate from that study to understanding, for example, what parents need to be thinking about when it comes to raising their sons. And the same essential logic applies, you know, what's true in how boys learn that they need a sense of being known and cared about is absolutely true in their homes and their families. So helping parents understand how relational boys are, how dependent they are on that sense of being known for who they really are, I think that's been the thrust of a lot of my work in coaching and working with parents.
I'm very curious about the age group you just mentioned. 12 to 18 years old. To me, that seems like we're starting late. Wouldn't we want to really look at those boys and how they are growing up by the time they are 8 years old?
That's a great question. And actually, that's where we began our work. But we replicated that same study with boys that were much younger, boys that were, just as you said, 8 years old, 9 years old, and 10 years old. And we found the same themes. We found that, you know, just as when you ask a sixth grade boy or a 10th grade boy or a 12th grade boy to tell stories about what's working for them and what's not working for them in schooling, we found the same kinds of themes in the answers that the third, fourth, and fifth grade boys provided to us. So I think that, you know, what we identified was essentially an essential reality about boys' natures, that they are indeed relational creatures just like girls.
Well, I tell you, I have a son and I have a daughter, so I've been really fortunate to be able to look deep into that over the years. What surprises me is that it used to be the boys were way ahead of the girls when they were, you know, so many more boys in high school and in college before the girls were really getting there, especially if you were a child of color. And I'm just curious to know if these boys feel as though they have the support. What parent is it? If they're both parents in the home, is it the father that is to really raise them, or is it both of the parents that should raise it and raise them? And if they do, if both of them raise them, do they need to have someone guide them on how this raising a boy should happen?
Well, you pack a lot in your questions. That's a lot. Well, you know, so I'm gonna answer some parts of it, but I'm not sure I'll remember all of them.
All right. So
number one thing to say, I think, is that you know, research on what parents of boys hope for their sons tells us, I'm thinking of a recent study of 400 parents of boys age 6 to 14. And when asked what was most important to them as an outcome for their sons, 94% of those parents said that they hoped their sons would be emotionally strong.
Mm.
Much higher agreement with that outcome than, for example, with physical strength. So, you know, it tells me something about what parents of boys are particularly concerned about, what they anticipate that their sons are going to have to face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's boys of color, which I think, you know, in some ways compounds the threats and the developmental pressures, or boys who come from more privilege, more advantage. I think that we all anticipate that our sons are going to be tested. They're going to face hard challenges, and we want them to be able to negotiate those challenges and stay strong. One of the problems, though, with what parents think makes for a strong child is that we think we need to toughen our sons by teaching them to stuff down their feelings, harden themselves, put on a tough front, a stoic front. And, you know, more recent research on what's called traumatic growth,
mm-hmm,
has taught us that some people can come through terrible challenges, traumatic experiences, and actually come out stronger. And you know what differentiates those folks who come out stronger? It isn't that they pretend or stuff their feelings down or you know, distance themselves from their relationships. It's just the opposite. The ones that are more resilient, more gritty, are ones who actually find ways of being honest about what they're feeling and find someone who can listen to them and know them. So when I talk to parents of boys, essentially what I do is I say, what your son needs most from you is that you create an opportunity for him to be himself, to be authentic, and to really let you know what he's feeling. Boys will get lots and lots of messages from the cultures that they live in, they operate in, from their peers and from media and from schools, you know, that they need to put on a front, hide behind a mask. At least at home, we're hoping that there's a parent who has enough of a connection with the boy that the boy can feel freer. He can take off the mask and, you know, reveal what's really going on, so he's not alone with it in the echo chamber of his own mind. Does that make sense?
It does, but I wonder, how do you define enough?
Well, you know, that's the lovely thing about, I'm a developmental psychologist, and that's the lovely thing about human development. We talk about good enough parenting, and what we mean is that we parents try, and we give it our best. We try, and you know, we make mistakes all the time, but what our children get to see is that we're really pulling for them, we're really trying. And I think a child is quite forgiving under those circumstances, because what your son will read when you reach for him and keep reaching, even though you're clumsy or you're preoccupied or you're stressed, what your son reads in that is that you're on his side and you're making your best effort.
I must ask this question, because hearing you talk about how the parents are really involved, if they are involved and they are really working together to raise that boy, I get it. At the same time, we are very clear as a nation that technology is now a part of the family, and that technology is teaching them things that their parents may not want them to know. Whether it begins at school. So how in the world do you remove that that parental guidance that they're having from technology?
Yeah. How old's your son, can I ask?
My son is 37 years old.
Okay. Well, you've done your job. Are you a grandparent yet?
I am, indeed.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, and it's a challenge even as a grandparent.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, I would just say this. I'm currently involved in doing a white paper on boys and pornography. And one of the really hard truths about technology and how it intrudes in boys' lives is that most boys learn sex education by sometimes involuntary exposure to pornography on their smartphones.
Right.
And, you know, the kinds of things that populate pornography websites have almost nothing to do with the kinds of things that accurately depict an act of connection and love and respect between a boy and someone he feels affection for. It's hard, it's crude, it's degrading, it's often misogynistic and exploitative, sometimes violent. But that's what boys are being exposed to ubiquitously now. And so your question, you know, what can parents do when technology takes over and creates sort of an alternate universe in the boy's life? Whether it's gaming or social media or pornography, you know, that's the truth of it. And I think what the American Academy of Pediatrics recent guidance is suggesting is that if we build a relationship with our sons and our sons trust us not to always scold them or shame them or dominate them, or tell them what to do and what not to do, but actually create a space where they can reveal themselves free of that kind of static. What they'll do is they'll actually share with us, for example, they'll feel freer to share with us that, hey, Mom, I came across this site. It was really confusing, troubled me, and I didn't know what to make of it, you know? We want them to be able to be open about what they're experiencing, whether it's on the internet or from their peer group. And the only way that happens is if they have a place where they can come and they're not going to upset us with what they share.
Mm. That's really interesting. I am very curious about what you learned through all of this, what you are still dealing with right now. And as you see it open up more and you learn more, what has surprised you so far?
You know, I've gotten to talk to lots and lots of audiences of parents all over the country, really, and very different kinds of audiences, very different cultures. And I would just say this to you and to your listeners. I think there's never been a better time to be raising a son. Mm-hmm. Despite our worries, despite all of the, you know, all the complications of technology and the ways that society is changing, particularly in terms of gender roles, you know, the compound stresses that affect children of color. Despite all of that, I still think it's true. And the reason I think it's true is that we're actually, honestly, scientifically evaluating how we go about raising sons, I think for the first time in history, rather than depending on prejudice and ideology and ancient beliefs. We're actually asking how well is what we think we know working in the field, for example, of boys' education. The discovery that boys are actually relational learners can revolutionize how we actually go about setting up schools and teach them. And likewise, I think when parents recognize that a big part of our job is less about teaching our sons how to be men and more about helping them reveal who they really are as people in an open way, when we understand that, we're really shifting the paradigm in dramatic ways.
And let's not forget that the mother is also involved in raising that boy, and so are the sisters. So, you know, my parents had six children, three girls, three boys. And the boys, they learned how to be boys from my father and my mother.
That's exactly right.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that affects, I don't have to tell you this, you probably know it, but just for the sake of hearing it said, there's a phenomenon that's called the mama's boy myth. A wonderful book by that name, by a journalist, Kate Lombardi Stone. And essentially, she interviewed lots and lots of mothers of sons around the country. And what she heard echoed over and over again was that mothers would become afraid that if they kept their sons too close, they would undermine their manhood. They would turn them into mama's boys. And that threat that so many mothers felt, you know, that they might ruin their sons by following their instincts to stay close to him, that really does impact many families and the relationship many mothers enjoy with their sons. A big part of what I do when I talk to audiences of parents is I say, mothers, that's not true. Trust your gut. Your son needs you. He wants to be known by you. And the last thing in the world he needs is for you to abandon him because you're afraid.
My goodness, I could talk to you for a whole nother hour. I'm so grateful that you joined us tonight. To have you on really matters. What you are talking about, people are going to want to know about this book. It's called The Mommy's Boy Book. Is that it?
The Mama's Boy Myth is that book. That's right.
Okay, The Mama's Boy Myth. All right. Thank you so much for giving us this information, and thank you for joining us. I hope to have you back on to talk about the girls as well.
Good,
that is Dr. Michael Roerke. Thank you so much, sir. Take care.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.